that verily, you know. The next time I'm dreaming that nobody is holding the steering. And I see Michael with both hands and they're coming over looking for his wings. That was a trip to Ramahane where he went and he served imprisonment in 46 in Durban. And Michael Scott and Father Register. And he was of course taken to the white side. You know, he didn't realize that he was a white prisoner and the others were this side. So he waved from that side. And the warders went up to him, "You do that outside prison. You get here, you're going to get thrashing from us." No way to get
there. How did he end up picking up the Bethel issue?
We sent him from the flat. We had information about people coming from Bethel, what's happening. Mm. And we had some very good rural Africans at the time. And then he went up from there. But what was terrifying, when the farmers invited him to come and speak, and we thought he was going to be lynched. And the journalist was taking him, and I said, "Nah, I'm not happy about this. You know, you know, it's fine, it's all right, I'm going to go." And he went, and he was the least nervous of all of us. No. It was terrifying.
Did you go with him?
No, we didn't. We didn't go. And we don't want to make complicated about sending an Indian with him. No. It was bad enough. They were boycotting all Indian shops at the time too. See, it was a very interesting thing. I sent Michael Scott. This is a very interesting story. I sent Michael Scott to do the research with the same car on Indian shopkeepers with the what effect the boycott was having. And then I got the stories from the shopkeepers afterwards. As soon as we saw a white man coming, we said, "I'm going to be careful who this fellow is." So they're talking in the vernacular. "Don't tell him the truth, you see, otherwise our credit will be affected." So Michael Scott said, "Now, how is the boycott getting on? These fellows are suffering from boycott." He said, "Oh, not touched at all. We are doing exceptionally well. Bigger profits than last year." He goes to the next shop, the fellow is about to go bankrupt. And he said a similar thing. "The guy is doing exceptionally well." There's an old Indian expression that he is surviving by eating herbs and lentils. India's cheapest food at the time. So Michael Scott writes, "Mr. So-and-so was a multimillionaire, surviving by eating lentils." So he got this research. We looked at it. He said, "No, Father, very useful work. People who you say are affected, just put not affected. People who are not affected, you got the answer." Our mistake was to send out a man who, you know, with whom the people couldn't relate with, you know, without any.
He used to have a little movie camera, didn't he?
He had a movie camera. You know what happened to that movie camera? We both would be broke. And now what we're going to do, Michael? I said, "No, it's all right. We've got to have one packet of soup. We'll boil that and we'll have half an hour." And then he'd say, "Ismail, let us pawn this dumb thing." So I said, "Right, we'll go with it." Same man each time, Ghulam Pahad. And I would say, "Ghulam, I'll phone and tell him that, you know, our time is arrived for." So Ghulam would give us 25 or 20 pounds, a lot of money. Keep it there. And I'll say, "Tell Michael, Michael, I think I'm going to get some and I'll pay it out to Ghulam. Let's, in the meantime, buy our food and, you know, stay." And then I would make arrangements to have the camera back from the pawn. We did this about four or five times.
Useful camera.
Very useful.
How did Ruth end up going to Bethel with him? Wasn't it another journalist who went first?
Yeah, no, she didn't go.
Did she go with him at all?
No,
she
wrote the story. I don't think so. This is 47, isn't it?
Sure.
Bethel is 46, 47. Because I dealt with Scott in the last three issues back on just that incident. And I think he went with the reporters. I don't think Ruth went to Bethel.
But she ended up writing a quite lengthy document.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yes. She did. In fact, the basic research was presented by her.
Where was she living through university? At home?
At home. She was living at home. I think she had after a while, I think maybe in the second or third year, she had a flat accommodation elsewhere for a while. Mm-hmm. But she was very much with her people.
So you don't know, I mean, was there quite a lot of, let me put it another way, were there quite a lot of whites? Okay.
Hello.
Were there quite a number of whites at that stage who had her views? Was she within a kind of group of people who were like-minded? Another way of putting it, did she embody the dreams of a group of people?
You see, Ruth came into contact with a larger number of people through her association with other individuals than, say, an ordinary member of the Communist Youth League or that, you know. So she was in a better position to have contact with Yusuf Dado, for that matter, who was, besides working in the movement, he was involved in the congresses for a very long time. But he was the first person to have served a term of imprisonment. But I would say that at that period of time, Ruth was not a leader of the Marxist movement as such. She was occupying a place, and she was a rising young person who was showing a lot of talent. You know, and I don't think it would be correct to say that she was representing a particular group. She was ahead of group, far ahead of group.
I have her academic records.
Yeah.
In fact, I've got them here.
Yeah.
She did draw the will at university.
Very well. She was a brilliant person, no doubt about it. She had a very good mind. And,
how did the papers get printed? Did you have sort of printers who would do it more cheaply?
Each paper was different. The Indian Views and the Opinion both had bought the old machines of the Mercury on the Indian News. And they were flatbeds. So you had a man feeding each sheet, you know, and you had the form with 8 pages. So 8 pages were printed one at a time. And each letter was set separately. So you had the trays with type, and you said T-H-E, so you put T capital, then H.
But one slugs.
No.
This letter set.
No.
Terrible.
So set each one. And then, worse still, when the printing was over, you washed the whole thing, then you took it back and said T goes into T, H goes into H, and E into E. So this was the Indian Views and Opinion. The same thing with Inkundla. The father minister was given out to a printer, so we are not our own printers. And the linotype were setting the thing. Now, also to take leader for the moment, the leader is printed on a rotary, but assembling is done by hand. You know, the pages.
So it's still hot metal?
Yeah.
Even today?
No, I don't know if it's a hot metal. I don't know what's that.
Literally. The slugs are set on a linotype and put on a...
No, say on a what do you call those things? Bromite or something.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm saying that they don't have to put the thing back, but the actual machine does not fold the paper, you see?
Yeah.
So you get them in 4 pages, but then you go 8 pages and you go to...
Insert.
That has to be done in hand.
Yeah. Now, the passive resistor was produced in Transvaal.
It was printed by a printer who did our work.
Who was that? Do you remember? Was it at Fordsburg?
Yeah, it was in Fordsburg. I can't remember the name of the firm now.
The guy turned...
Commercial firm, huh? You were not a person who was sympathetic to us. But what was important? I was interested in the nationalist group of the Indian Congress, which took over the Indian Congress in the Transvaal. And it was called the Nationalist Group. And we couldn't get a printer to print their material. And somebody went to one of the nationalist papers and said, nationalists will do anything for you. They got it done. They didn't understand what it was about. Just as for Kaiser resistance in Natal, false caste had just started its bank and they were looking for customers. And they gave us a very nice overdraft to fight the authorities.
The contradictions of the system.
Yeah.
And did you have much to do with Guardian?
Guardian, I did from Natal, I was I distributed it, but from Natal I was correspondent for some time.
Yeah. Governor Becky was doing the same in the Eastern Cape.
That's right.
How would you, I mean, this sounds pedestrian, but how would you actually write an article on a typewriter and post it, how would it happen?
Yeah, we did it in typewriters. Yeah. We did our own typing. I'd type it out this myself.
And then would it be assembled in Johannesburg or Cape Town?
No, Cape Town. Then we would have a special arrangement by, by a certain time it has to be handed in. So express delivery is reaches there. But, we have to have those newsprint the right size, so when we're setting it, so it was done. You would have byline to say the first line and then one in brackets and second page two in brackets or typed out so that you never lose the pages. That sort of thing had to be done.
And then was there a Cape edition and a Transvaal edition, or were they all the same?
Which of? By the way,
Guardian.
Guardian was one as well. There was not. None of them were that. I don't know if you have seen Cape Standard, have you? Mm-hmm. The Sun, I think, was the main paper of the United Party. This came out in more opposition.
How did you get money to print Passive Resistor? Or any of the other newspapers? It must have been
very hard. No money at all for anything of this. But we went and canvassed for advertising. It was very, very difficult to finance it.
The resistance?
Nobody were paid. I mean, we all did free work. So there was more overhead, minimal. And the printer carried us for an issue or two issues or more.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very tough point. Take, for instance, this family paper that was here, the Indian Views. My wife is Fatima. Her father was the editor of the paper. When he died, his son took over. When he died, we ran it for 4 weeks, and we found that it was impossible for us to run around and collect money from advertisers and all that, and we had to give it up. And there was no machinery in any of these papers to allow a succession to take place. The individual effort, and you knew, and you sort of coerced people into giving certain adverts and this sort of thing. Guardian was different in that you had donation system. The front page said donations for this week from so and so. We had teams of people going out and collecting donations.
Yeah. I was speaking to Trudy Gill, and she used to help form little parties. Where they do a bit of political work, and then at the end of the tea party, they'd ask for money for the Guardian.
Yeah. And then you'll see some of the amounts are very small amounts. We had the entire pacifism struggle here without any money. What happens nowadays that you get money coming from overseas? Some people of my background, we refuse to take money for any political case, and we don't want to prevent what the others are doing. So we have stepped out of that field, largely because of this financing from overseas, which is...
Lawyers are making large amounts of money.
It's totally objectionable to us. I did group areas hearings for years without charging a penny. I can see the problem if a person is to be taken away from his office for 3 months or a year, that he has a problem. Treason trial of 19, I was accused in 1956, Ruth was in it too. And we paid Coker £250 a month, as a preparatory. Now that sort of thing doesn't happen now.
Yeah.
Fisher and all appeared and they didn't charge us anything.
Yeah. So have definitely changed. Yeah. Because they're now charging 13 rand per telephone call.
No, it's absolutely shocking. I mean, I think it's a worst form of exploitation. I wonder what sort of prayers those lawyers have. Almighty, send us more cases and get more people arrested in town.
Yeah. You were in the treason trial for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then what happened? Were you they sort of pruning down the accused?
Yeah, at the end of the preparatory examination, I was here in Wedlam Court and was instructed in my, of course, examining a witness, Mercury, phone to say that the Attorney General has declined to prosecute.
What was that like?
Yeah, and my reaction was, well, what happened to the rest? They said, the rest are still there. So I said, well, I'm not free. I'd like to go and see what's going on there. I mean, you know, everybody's innocent. Now, why is drag one longer for those people? Mm. And then the others were... And then state of emergency were again inside, you know, so that...
Were you arrested in state... You were arrested in state of emergency?
Yeah. I'd served in 46 campaign. I'd served in 52 campaign. And then came the treason trial, and then came the state of emergency. So... The state of emergency was a period of, you know, we were in for about 4 months, for now.
There's lots I'd like to ask you, but how's your time doing?
What's your time? I'm moving with the time only.
Oh, it's 11:40. Good.
Now you've got still a few minutes.
Yeah. Hey. Have you written down anything? Is this what you? Is this the way you do it?
I haven't written anything down, particularly because of the. I would like to write it down. You know, I've been involved in law practice. I've been appearing in court almost every day, and it means, you know. On my feet all the time, but I went from in the next 3 months to stop this work, and then I'll have time to put my thoughts down.
Even a collection of...
Yeah. That can be, already there's enough there for a very thick volume. It's very much personal recollections.
Yeah. Because...
No, we come from the village of Washbank, which is in northern Natal. And
the father had a shop there, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. And the policeman, Dundee, used to come very close to the two brothers I had. And my brother was very friendly with this policeman, who used to know him well before he joined the police force. And then he went to work in Johannesburg. He came back to Washbank. It turned out to be Mr. A.W.G. Champion. And the biggest branch of the ICU in Natal was in Washbank area. And we worked with Champion for many, many years.
The Champion was the policeman?
Yeah, he was the policeman. Oh, then the Champion one day came and told my brother that there's a very important man coming because Kadali has sent him. And they must go to Glencoe, which is the station. So my brother went with him and brought this person, a white man from overseas. They had a meal at my father's place at our shop. And then they went to Dundee, and this man spoke at Dundee. And he said, this is the first meeting I'm addressing in South Africa. My name is William Ballinger. I've been sent by the labor movement.
Amazing.
And I don't get a passport, but I managed to get one on medical ground to go to London for a medical checkup. And I was in the plane, and it was a charter for mostly university people. Those are young person. With whom I started talking, she said she was from Western Cape. And have you heard of Kadali? I said, yes, to my grandfather. I said, of course I knew my grandfather. He came and spoke at Washbank in a huge meeting. And then he came into my father's shop. He said, I like the gramophone. It was a Columbia gramophone costing 7 whole pounds. He said, I'll want that. So he said, right, and we opened an account, and we took his name and address, and for the next 5.5 years, I sent him monthly statement, and it's still not been paid.
It's not been paid. Because, you know, I've been looking for secondary work in the 40s
and
50s.
What do you do at...
I teach journalism.
Journalism? Oh, lovely. You've got the best centre, isn't it, for journalism?
It's the only undergraduate centre, yeah. But my background is in history.
History?
African
right.
history, basically.
Well, I want to know more about history.
But there's so little about
oral
that period.
History there?
Oral history. No, not as a course, but I mean, that's how I work.
Yeah, I know. I want to know more about it, but I want to do some myself. This is part of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Let me find something and send it to you.
No, I want to know. Mr. What is his name again? American ambassador? Perkins.
Yes.
For this budget. All this. Another history. Hmm?
Well, what's this one?
All from the States, you know, these people have their bit of just getting it.
There's a very good Oral History Association in America.
Yeah.
That's right, I'll tell you.
Yeah. So with this, I'll just come. I'm going to spend a very enjoyable time going through it and see what I can do. But I would like to see the Tartu University in Durban, Westfield, what department they have. And if I can take off, as I want to, in the next 2 or 3 months from here, I could.
The chap you see there is Kian Tomaselli.
Where?
In the Durban University.
Who is he?
He's the head.
Head of what?
Head of the Center for Cultural Studies.
Oh.
And he's the best person to talk about that kind of thing.
I would like, I haven't been to a varsity for a very long time, and I'm going to go and sit.
Just anyway?
Yeah. Are there anybody, any Natal students at your place doing journalism?
Mm. I get them, but like, sort of. I never work out where they're from. They're just my students. I seldom ask them where they come from.
Now, what other works of Ruth you have got?
Most of them. And I'm collecting lots of other things as well.
What made you choose Ruth?
I've written several books, and they've always been historical and general in the tradition, sort of left-wing tradition, which doesn't tend to personalize. And then I decided that's not getting to people. People like reading about other people. And I was based at UCT in Cape Town. I was going to do a biography of Sissy Gould, which still needs to be done.
I worked with her very closely.
And then I went up to Rhodes, and I spent more time in Joburg. And then I read, I was in hiding in the emergency, and during that time I read 117 Days, which had a lot of impact on me. It was very pertinent to me at that point. And then I started reading more and more of her books. I read Olive Schreiner, which is a brilliant book. It's really what she did with Scott.
The best.
She thinks it's the best. In fact, I've got some letters from her that she says so. And she seemed to embody so much of the tradition that I'm trying to get across to younger, new journalists today. They don't know. I mean, I was at an Association of Democratic Journalists meeting on Sunday in Joburg, and they had no sense of the tradition from which they were coming. They were saying, this is a whole new thing that we're starting here, democratic journalists. And I said, no, wait a minute, you know. What you don't know is that it goes all the way back to Pringle, to Plaikie, to Jabavu. They had no sense of their traditions. Yeah. And I think through somebody like Ruth, I could best reinstall those traditions into the movement.
Leave it on Sissy, but Dr. Abdurrahman, there's nothing on it.
There's a bit. I did quite a lot of work in Cape Town, and Abdurrahman wrote quite a bit.
No, but I mean, what has been written on the life of Abdurrahman?
There's no biography.
No biography. Not only that, but I mean, I wrote in this series on Abdurrahman, because he, in 1925, led the South African Congress delegation to India, you know that. But I read about him, and then I used to remember the month of Ramadan when people used to come from Cape to collect money. They would come to my father's shop, and they would sing some Arabic hymns and so on, and then they would tell us, you know, there's a man, Abdurrahman, his father was born in slavery, his grandfather had been brought from Bengal, and then this what happened, and, you know, this folklore. And we were fascinated by this, you know, how this little child, the father and mother prayed that he should not become a slave, and how they found money in the church and sent him to...
Was this in the song?
Yeah, you know, how they sent him and he became a doctor, and he arrived in South Africa the same year as Gandhi arrived. You know, the qualified attorney arrived and a qualified doctor arrived from Glasgow. So all this was, you know, that we heard from people who used to come and, you know, spend time with us, you know, they knew something about the history of this man, but you ask now, Sissy's, Varadia was her sister. I used to spend some time with Sissy in Cape Town. But the man there called, we must know him, what is his name again, who was doing some work on Afrikaans, you know, how the first Afrikaans was written in Arabic language and so on. David. Oh, beautiful work of his. You know, he has been able to trace the writing of the Muslim writing in Arabic. But if you read it, it's Afrikaans. You know? Mm. And the Afrikaans, because they couldn't speak the High Dutch. So this was the Fanagalo way of expressing. He says that the earliest writing is this particular fellow sending this off to the Cape Dunbros to say that he wants a piece of land where he could erect a mosque. You know, and you know, there's no older documents than these
in Afrikaans.
In Afrikaans, and their script is Arabic. It's not Latin script.
That's extraordinary. If you start writing, there will be no end of publishers. I'm quite sure.
That's so.
In fact, I'm a sort of agent for David Philip on the side, and he's desperately looking for historical stuff from South Africa. So you would have no problem getting it published. The only problem is your listing.
Yeah, that's the only problem. I can't write under that. Everybody puts something else. But you see, I have... it's offered.
No, let me put it. Yeah, it is.
From the time of listing, I've not stopped writing. But you know, the thing is that this type of journalism, where you see, you take, for instance, this issue. You see, take this issue. This is my article. It's I belong to this Natal School Granted Association. I'm the chairman of it. We have 62 schools under us, and education problems are still continue to deal with it. You know, the bill now, they are taking away the right of this, you know, the preschool from Natal. That's one. The editorials.
Do you write all the editorials?
Yeah. This one.
Yeah. You're doing a lot of writing.
See, that one there. This is my on the debate. Right. Then somehow this column is written about, it started off with very life, it still says, this has become one of the most popular in the paper. It's a question of the teacher who traveled by bus from here to Durban, from Phoenix. What happens, conversation on the bus. So it has been going on for a very long time. And it has become quite a popular show. Actually, out of this paper, they are getting a lot of free work done without having to pay.
Is this the most popular
The reason why I'm working for this paper, doing work for this paper.
The only one?
It's the only one which is not owned by somebody outside the family paper belonging to a black family. It's independent.
In the country or?
Well, I mean, within the there's an indicator or something in there, you know. I mean, Akalwaya and Joburg. You know that one. But there's Langa belongs to the Ghat now,
yeah.
And the, Argus has the rest. So, I mean, what else have we got?
Yeah, there's just the only other paper that I know of that's a family affair is the Grocott's Mail in Grahamstown.
Yeah.
And that's
the Witness. We had at one time tremendous possibilities, but they were employing Streeling Woodley at the moment.
Yeah.
And it was blood consciousness. So, but I mean, I find so satisfying able to do this much.
If writing is, you know,
Sunday night, was it Sunday night? When was the debate? Monday, I think. So I, early in the morning, I typed this and I gave it in, I drove over and gave it in. By this time, we have had a problem here on this question of what's happening, and now people want to know. So this is going to be a series now.
Mm.
You know, the next article. So this is, the Thai people should do this without any, the paper must be able to find minimum two.
Yeah. Is it struggling as a paper?
It is struggling. It's one of those that haven't been financed from overseas at all.
Yeah.
I'm sure if they approach, they will get money.
And you feel
but I was told that new nations have been financed up to $2.5 million already.
Mm. So, well, now, of course, the problem is going to come with this funding crackdown.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a major problem. And it's going to be a problem for lawyers, too, I think.
Well, I won't be sorry for that. I mean, who decides which case requires a series of top lawyers and which doesn't?
Mm.
You know, it can lead to a tremendous amount of injustice.
Mm. Yeah. Last question. Do you think Ruth ever stayed in the party? Oh, I mean, did she stay in the party for always? I mean, was her politics ever to one side of the party? Did she have conflicts with it at all?
Not that I know. I don't know conflict at all.
Mm. I just wondered if
was there a solution that she had?
She had a very critical, positively critical way of going about everything. And I've often wondered if there's not a slight conflict, a creative conflict between the party line, which she would hold on one hand, and being the journalist she was on the other hand, and telling it like it is in a way. I wonder if that kind of conflict ever arose.
I'm not aware of any. I mean, I know that I was not there because I had decided that this was the only path to choose, and you know, Marxism was the way of solving all the problems. My getting into activities was not a Marxist approach to start with. You know, it was quite a different way of doing. You know, we came from a my lessons were learned in Wash Bank where there was no conflict. You know, and my father was, the others were, you know, I was told this by an Afrikaner magistrate here, but this was the attitude that my father was different. The others were police, perhaps, you know. I mean, when this Soweto thing started in 76, I was called by a magistrate who was very friendly here, but he was very, very narrow-minded. He said, I see, I want to see you. See what's happening. These people are rejecting my language. So I said, don't be so upset about it. He said, no, you fellows will never learn and understand what we Afrikaners are. She said, when I was small, one day called Nanny, who brought us up, Kappa. And my father came and took me into the room and took out a belt and he beat me up until I was bleeding. He said, she is Annie. Those who don't work for us are Kappas. So you have that. The washroom was very much protected. There were no coolies there, you see. And then I, coming to Durban, my wonderful experience was nobody thought of hygiene that you'd have suffered tumblers when you're eating. You used to have a thing made out of a silver thing, but it was not silver, but in any case. We went to eat at Bluff, and they were the Zanzibaris who were the slaves liberated in 1838 here, Africans. And they were Muslims. And we all sat down to eat, and huge trays, at least six people ate together. And it taught you a wonderful idea of sharing. Because if six people were eating and there were five pieces of meat in the center, then they were created a problem. And all drank from the same water. You know, to me, this was a new experience, and coming to Durban and we're going there, and here we find all, because we were Muslims, we were all eating together. And it was the birthday of the Prophet. So you didn't say only Muslims come to eat. You eat with everybody. Because we were a fair measure of whites. But who were the whites? All the hobos who couldn't get me for the day were there with us.
Sharing happening.
And this was all done in the name of Islam. It was a wonderful thing to see. Again, all that has disappeared even in Durban now. It doesn't exist. We don't go to, you know. The Zanzibar was very interesting. They were Africans. Then they were classified as colors. The colors objected to it. Then they took away their land, a bluff, which was bought for them by the Grey Street Mosque. And they became a white group area. So they were now shunted into Indian group area at Chatsworth. So they are now the third classification. They were reclassified from Africa, colored, now they are Indians.
What a country, my God.
Somebody will classify them as human beings one day.
Yeah.
How long are you going to be around?
I'm here for the next... I have to leave on Thursday.
Who are you seeing? Are you seeing anybody else?
I was going to ask you that. Who should I see?
Jay and Singh, just make a note. Whether he is available or the left of the state, I don't know. J.N. Singh, S-I-N-G-H, 821404. Now, I tell you that he was with us, right? He has now become, with all his bannings and so on, a fairly substantially wealthy man. He's a director of the Republic Bank also, which is the Indian, Sahara Indian Bank. His children are in the States, so he spent more time in the States than here.
Mm.
But is
the connection in which it would be useful for me to see?
He was at the same time as Ruth in the university.
Oh, really?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then, he can give you some idea of the university life of that time.
Mm.
And you are very well. I don't know whether you should see Roli Aronstein.
I've been wondering whether I shouldn't, perhaps.
Personally, I think with all the differences that one has with him, with the Encarta, he had other approaches to the ANC and so on. But he is a worthwhile meeting.
I'm just wondering if it wouldn't be a problem for me in terms of all the other people that I have to see.
I don't think you have to advertise that you have seen him. But,
yeah. Because I had to
I think it's an experience. I wouldn't say you shouldn't see him.
But where does one find him? In the Encarta offices?
I don't know. Now, if you have time, it's worthwhile just meeting the man.
Yeah.
Because Roli came to Natal from Ermelo, where his father was a grain merchant.
Mm.
And he lived in his office and slept in an office, earning £25 a month.
Mm.
His background of sacrifice is not to be forgotten, and just to honor to find out what makes him tick. Is
I had the same problem with whether I should see Piet Bijleveld or not.
Yeah, I don't know. Piet is a different type of person. What is Piet doing now?
I think that he is still running his printer's business. He was a printer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
But I did hear that he had emphysema. He's about to die.
No. In the town about who you saw? You saw Kachalia also?
Yes, no, I spent quite a lot of time with him in a...
What background he had? He knew...
He was wonderfully useful. His Yusuf's main use to me was the Congress Alliance stuff. And he worked in the coordinating committee.
That's right.
The Congress of the People.
Yeah.
And he was very central in the whole Kaptan issue.
Yeah. Also in the western areas.
Mm. So I spent a couple of days chatting to Amina. Amina has got a very good memory.
Yeah.
Particularly. Yeah.
Keep in touch with us.
Mm,
drop us a note so we can drop you. Write down your name and address for me in the same place.
Yeah. Okay. I'm waiting to see what you write. I want to see your book.
Here, I read some of this. You know what I have done. I've written this. This in such a way that I get the readership And the biggest amount of questions are being asked is, where do you get this from?
The pictures.
Pictures came. Every issue has got every issue has got this selection of good photographs. And that really picks up the pace. And
where do you get the photographs? They're extraordinary.
You see this?
Yeah.
That's Fatima's, I think, Fatima's class. Mm. You see Yusuf Dadu dreaming about, you know. This is my name.
There's a book being written about him.
That's right. And not a word about his most important contribution to the liberal study group. In fact, it says just the opposite.
Mm.
It says he objected to Indians having going to the dance with African girls or something.
Is that Tim Cousins' book?
Yeah.
No, I don't. It's not a very good book.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
The whole period of his is left out.
Yeah. Where do you get the photographs from? Do the newspapers have photos?
No, we've got a number of sources, but we have also been able to reproduce from the photographs that appeared at the time.
Yeah.
And then we used to also, you know, the Indian opinion used to have Diwali issue with the glossy pages.
Mm.
The views had the Eid issue, and these are very easy.
Because they're nice and glossy, you can pick them up. Yeah, that's useful.
You have that.
Ishmael, Yusuf had some very nice pictures.
Yeah, yeah, I know. He's got lovely pictures.
In fact, he, Amina lent some to you, didn't she?
She's got, I've got a few of them, yeah. I want to get back a bit into, we have reached 47, but I want to now find some way of getting back to 40 when we got there to Wits, and then deal with more personal approach to Nelson and Yusuf and them. And I think that's important. Also Yusuf's brother, Malvi, very interesting man. India honored him in ANC.
He's in India,
yeah.
India now.
Yeah. Yeah, the government of India gave him the honors of award. He was in charge of the ANC office in the village for a while, but he is now in the village.
Yes, he has a big beard, if I remember.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scratching around for pictures as well. But, I think I'm going to find them in London.
Did you get any of them?
I got some.
Have you got the one of Ruth at the border crossing? When we had the Brazilian resistors going across the border.
Have you got a picture of him?
I think I have, but we used it in Fatima's book, you know, the portrait of Indian South African people there. Can we produce that one?
Yeah.
I don't think I've got any others.
Was she involved in actually walking across a...
No. She was a journalist who went to cover the, you know, Indian resistors arrived from here. Yusuf Dadu was to meet them with the resistance. And Monty Naika took this batch of 15. I was at Fortsburg with a huge meeting where they were going to arrive, and to hear that they have been arrested. They were not arrested. And I had already made my speech that when they get arrested, it will be a wonderful victory for us. Now I went back to the mic and I said, now it's a wonderful victory for us, they have not been arrested. I said, by the resistance you never lose. So when I finished my speech, there was an Africana constable who was there. He knew me. He said, I'm hot. I don't understand this, but the resistance never lose.
That's good strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
So had Ruth gone to the border to...
She had gone to the border with Yusuf Dadu. Mm. This was the extension of the Brazil resistance from the Gale Street to... Gandhi had done that in 1913.
Yeah.
You know, and now we're doing it for the second time.
Yeah.
And that was covered by her.
So there's a photograph of her.
I think I've got a photograph of her.
If I can't get it from the book sometime, I might come back to you and ask if you can get a copy made.
Yeah, sure. I don't think I've got the book here. Planning to come in here, please. Have you seen the little book on Fatima's publishing? He also had problems because car bannings, we had to get things out in the name of my daughter. One of my daughters in Cape Town, she is a legal resources, she is a lawyer. Mm. One in Johannesburg, who is a author, writing, speak in a magazine and two magazines, she's a legal. And she is married to son-in-law at the trade union.
What's his name?
Mari, Bobby Mari.
The posh school here, and he resigned a couple of years before he was due to retire in order to become visiting professor of education at Wits. And he'd done that. I met him in Johannesburg before he made that decision. He did it because he saw the connection between South Africa and Nazi Germany and the need for de-Nazifying education. And he saw the need to build up the all the elements that were opposing the government, regardless of who they were. So he had no fear of the fact that some people were communists and they were black. And
those were anti-fascist.
Yes, well, as long as they were anti, yes, the government. And he was a huge, flat-footed man. He once said that if Verwoerd had married Margaret Rutherford, who was a British comic actress, he would have been the... he looked a bit like that. And he had wonderful connections with the Black Sash and with academics and schools, and he was so impressed by some of these black school kids who, under Bantu education, would be asking him all about revolutions at some period in history. And also he went to the trial of, I forget who it was, I think it was a young Indian who'd been very badly tortured, and saw him standing up to the security police. Then Burley would come back to England, where half the government had been his pupils at Eton, and then he would dine out on these stories. And he would read Shakespeare in his flat at Wits with some young black politicals. I think he and his wife helped people cross the border sometimes too, on occasion.
When was he there?
He was there. I met him there first. I don't know. A couple of us did a little book on him. Where's it there? He was there in 65. I think for about 3 years. I'm not sure. Sheena Duncan did a nice piece about him.
Is that a book about him in South Africa, or...?
Partly. Trying to see what Soli, 3 year book, is trying to see... He did the Richard Feetham lecture on academic freedom in 1970. John K. Berman, who's become Sir Pro Buthelezi.
And heavy-handed, really. He's getting rid of all the people smoking left in
him. Really?
It's terrible.
What went wrong with him?
He dined out with too many of those kind of people,
I suppose. I hardly know. I only met him once. Randolph Fine. I mean, Burley was terrific. 1966. He was terrific with the young saboteurs. 64 to 66, and then he went back a couple of times. Randolph Fine, John T. Driver.
Was that just to buy out little bits of
farm? Yes. Franz Auerbach, Harold Stubbs, Raymond Tucker. This talks about Burley and Shanti Naidu. I did a bit, yes, I met him there in 62. That's when he was deciding how he might come back and work there.
I'd like to get a copy of
it. I'll see if there's still one in existence.
Must be in the library somewhere.
No, I don't know. We did it privately.
Oh, really?
Can you write your... Oh, except there are no mails. Hi, Margaret. Do you still have any copies of the Burley booklet? Could I... Will you be in if I send someone round to pick one up? All right. Okay, thanks. Bye. Ah, well... they've got copies about three blocks from here. They won't be there until after two, but that's all right.
Where is
it? At David Astor's house, so I'll tell you, I'll draw you a little map.
When did you do this?
Don't know, but after he died, about... Because we didn't think the official biography of him properly dealt with. If there's a little foreword, is there or not, where we explain? Does that not give a date?
No, no. That's unforgivable.
Dear me, dear me. My God. Oh, maybe it says when he died. It would have been a few months later. Now, let's think how we are. Right, here is... anything.
Mm-hmm.
Might have made a profit, I'm sure. Well, I think to Eton and Willing, I don't know, Marlborough, I think, contributed.
Talking about Burley in conjunction with Christopher
Gill. They both had this capacity, they both had the sheer knowledge of history and of public affairs, that they could bridge all these gaps between organizations and had no fear of communists. See, the liberals were petrified of communists, and in those days the Black Sash were. Black Sash now get on, you know, they at all these meetings, they're terrific, those women, and how outspoken they are, and the way they get together with UDF, etc., etc., regardless of who the UDF's made up of.
Often it's because of people like Miriam Hepner.
Yes. Now, is her daughter married to... Neville Rubin?
I don't know the children at all. I've not met them. I know them well, but...
Did the father die recently? Did her husband die?
No.
Oh. Maybe I'm mixing it up with another family. All right, now number 9. You go, so listen, you're coming along, that's, no, rather put Langford Court there. There's Langford Place. Or Langford Court is there. So you're going to go along Abbey Road. You don't take that left, the second left, which is Circus. And the second on the right is Cavendish Avenue. And it's number 9. You don't go to the front door. There's a little gate at the side. You go through there and down to the bottom of the garden, where you'll see a little sort of glassed-in place, which is where the secretaries are. So you just walk through the garden.
Okay, who died?
And it's Margaret Robinson there, said it.
Yes,
come for the little girly book.
It sounds like a girl would be a very nice subject to have.
Somebody was doing one, and then she never did. And his wife, who remarried and lives in France, was already with materials and so forth, and then nothing came of it. He would be, yes, because I wonder who had, she I think has most of his archive. I could give you her address and phone number. Her name is Nora, was an H girl. And what's her name now? Nora Edward.
Because the paper was X-ray, wasn't it?
I think so, and then later they started an X-ray in Britain.
But he died in the Eastern Cape, didn't he?
Yes, in PE, in about 1963, I suppose. Nora. Always have to remember people's new names.
People should keep their own names.
Nora Lydell, it is. L-Y-D-A-L-L. Well, there, I haven't got the phone number. There's the address.
Edward Nora.
That's her husband, Edward. Oh, I know what you could do. Not forget something out of my luggage case. Since you can't go until 2 o'clock.
This is a Nora 60 goes after France, does it?
Yes.
Good.
I don't know why. Yeah. Oh, maybe that's the phone number. I don't know. Right, that must be the phone number.
Not many phones in there.
Yeah, that would be the phone number. It's this tiny village.
So much to write about.
She comes from TV. No, no, she comes from Rustenburg. She goes back there quite often.
The 50s are not sufficiently written about.
Well, everyone's forgotten about it now.
There's not enough of new people around.
Yeah. Yes. Well, when my memoirs come out.
How can I read them?
You can't until they come out, can you?
Yeah, before
you
I can't.
Pinch it all.
Oh, yeah,
ring up the publisher and say how desperately, urgently they are needed.
I'll do that with pleasure.
Now, let's go and get something out of the luggage place. Make you earn your keep.
We're not staying too long. Yeah.
I haven't got anything to do today.
Thank you.
appeal to you.
So who wrote that charter, Mary?
This one was Winnie. Who wrote what?
The Freedom Charter.
This wasn't Cape Town Freedom Charter Town. This was, I think it was a hodgepodge of people.
Not Rusty Bernstein.
Well, he may have edited the whole thing, but I don't think any one person. I don't really know, but I assume it was because when you read it, it's quite a hodgepodge, and some of it is so not primitive, but so not corny. I don't know what I mean, but it's very touching, and now it's become so frightfully respectable. You think of all the suspicions of the time as to who wrote this seditious document, etc.
I only ask that half in jest. It was one of those contentious issues that
still
gets around.
Yes.
I asked Rusty if he wrote it.
Yes.
He chuckled and wouldn't answer.
Oh, really? Oh, well. Who knows? I don't know.
The Atlantic Charter seems to have had a lot of influence on the people who wrote
it. Yes. Well, I don't know, in the 1940s they took things so seriously. I don't really know.
I don't know if it's anywhere gone. It's all chaos.